Hi, everybody, and welcome back to English Digest. I'm Pat.
I'm Leah.
And today we're looking at the second part of our article on Pushkin's The Queen of Spades, this short story written by a Russian author, which we'll get into. So you might remember from yesterday, hopefully you listened to that too, the story was about a guy called Herman who found out that there was a secret to win a lot of money on a particular card game. But to get this secret, he caused the death of the countess who was supposed to know the secret.
And this fella originally was not even a gambler himself very much. He would sit in the corner and listen to the stories that were being told. But his greed for that possibility to gather all that money together into his hot little hands led him to get to the gambling tables and start try his luck.
Yeah, and in getting the secret, he kind of broke a maidservant's heart and caused the death of the countess herself. She then seemed to open her eyes and glare at him during her funeral, then appeared as a ghost to him to tell him the secret, and although it seemed to be going well, on the very final bet, he ended up losing because he'd somehow put all his money on the Queen of Spades. And he then noticed the card seemed to look like the countess, and the card seemed to wink at him. So what exactly was going on there? As it's a story that starts off as kind of like a human morality story.
That's what I was going to say too. We're getting into the morality of human nature.
But then it also changes into a kind of a ghost story almost. So what sort of story is this? We're going to discuss that and a few other things in part two of our article. So let's read through it first.
The Queen of Spades is a short story by legendary Russian writer Alexander Pushkin. Published in 1834, it has inspired a number of other works, including classical music composer Tchaikovsky's opera of the same name, along with several movies. The inspiration for it comes from a real Russian noblewoman said to have learned the Pharaoh's secret in Paris. The Queen of Spades carries a clear warning against the perils of greed and poses interesting questions about what's real and what isn't. The theme of greed is evident in Herman's transformation from one who observes gambling to one willing to hurt others to achieve his ends. He manipulates Lizaveta, and even after his actions result in the death of the Countess, he still tries to get rich. Of course, he loses everything and, in Pushkin's conclusion, actually goes insane. And this can be seen as him getting what he richly deserves. But how did this happen? Pushkin blurs the boundaries between reality and the supernatural in his story. Did the dead countess's eyes really open at her funeral? Or was this a sign of Herman's guilt? The same questions apply to the apparition of the Countess's ghost and the final moment where the Queen of Spades card winks at Herman. Did the Countess somehow switch his bet from the ace to the Queen from beyond the grave? Or did Herman deliberately cause his own downfall as a way to punish himself for his crimes? All of these questions are open to the reader's interpretation. Okay, so let's take a look at our article for today. Day two starts out with The Queen of Spades is a short story by legendary Russian writer Alexander Pushkin. So our story that we are talking about over the literature section of the magazine this month is a short story. It's not a long novel. It's not a story written in verse, probably, but it's not a play, but it's actually a short story. And who is it by? Well, it's by the legendary Russian writer Alexander Pushkin. Whenever we use the word legendary to talk about a person, it means they're absolutely amazing. They're someone who is at the top of their game in a certain field. So a lot of times you might think of a legendary guitarist or a legendary artist or something along these lines.
Yeah, someone who is so famous that it almost seems like they're from a legend, an old story. Legendary could also mean things that only appear in legends, you know, ancient heroes, flying monsters, that kind of stuff. But here, legendary means this person was a legend. This was a great. This one was one of the with the greatest Russian writers. So let's go back to the story. Published in 1834, it has inspired a number of other works, including classical music composer Tchaikovsky's opera of the same name, along with several movies. So we've got the publishing date. So this is, you know, getting on almost 200 years old, this story, but right. It inspired other works. So we've got one here, this opera. So an opera of the same name means the opera was also called The Queen of Spades. And that was by classical music composer Pyotr Ilyich. Is it Ilyich? I think it's Tchaikovsky. Ilyich, yeah. Mostly you probably recognize the name Tchaikovsky. Very, very famous.
1812.
Exactly. Russian composer. Did a lot of, he was a composer, so he composed the music. He wrote the music. He figured out what instruments were going to play when, each tune the instrument people would, the orchestra would play, worked out how it was all going to fit together. He wrote the whole lot.
In America, a lot of times on July 4th, so 4th of July, when the fireworks are going off, you'll hear this 1812 overture going off from Tchaikovsky because it's such, it times really well with the booms of the fireworks.
So yes.
Da, 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 boom, boom.
Yeah, he's, of course, famous for many, many works. He wrote operas, he wrote shorter pieces, longer pieces. I mean, Tchaikovsky is worthy of an entire article in himself.
Absolutely. But legendary.
Yeah. And for this, we just need to know that he was inspired by the story to go, I'm going to write an opera with this story, with, you know, singing in and parts of stuff like that. And there's been a few movies that have been made about this story as well. None recently, from what I could tell.
Right. 1950s or so.
So, yeah, maybe at some point it'll be done again. Mm-hmm. You know, these things always come round.
The inspiration for this story comes from a real Russian noblewoman said to have learned the pharaoh's secret in Paris. Okay, so the inspiration, the guiding motivation to create this story, the thing that sparked this story, was a real Russian noblewoman. So a real lady, maybe a countess, maybe not quite that high up in the noble levels of society. But she was a noblewoman, a woman of rank, a woman of title, a woman probably of a lot of money. And she supposedly learned the pharaoh's secret, that sequence that we talked about yesterday with the 3-7 ace, that pharaoh's secret in Paris. From my understanding, a little bit of looking into pharaoh, it was a very popular game in Paris. And it was also a very popular game in the Wild West in America for a bit of time as well.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing I might try and play now. Yeah, I've kind of had a look up of the rules. Yeah, I just won't bet it on the queen. So the article then says, the Queen of Spades carries a clear warning against the perils of greed and poses interesting questions about what's real and what isn't.
If you notice, the Queen of Spades is in quotation marks, right? Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about the actual Queen of Spades in the deck of cards. We're talking about the story.
That's right. So we talked about the word greed yesterday, meaning this kind of lust for money or the lust for something, possessions. And here the story is warning against the perils of greed, the dangers, the bad consequences that can and do happen if you give in to greed. If you chase wealth and don't really care about who gets hurt as you try to get it, then bad things are going to happen to you. So the perils of greed, that's one of the main and fairly obvious themes of this story. It's a clear warning. Don't be greedy. Bad things will happen.
Right. And it poses, or it brings out, talks about these interesting questions about what's real and what isn't. So this is where we're starting to turn slowly into talking about kind of the ghostly side of our story, or the supernatural side. That's going to come out a little bit in the second half of our talk today. The theme of greed is evident in Herman's transformation from one who observes gambling to one willing to hurt others to achieve his ends. So the theme of greed, the main focus, the main point of the story being about greed, it's evident. So it's clear. It's obvious. It's something you can very easily see in certain actions. And for example, Herman's transformation, his change from someone who observes or watches gambling to someone willing to jump in there and make sure he does anything to get what he wants, which is his money that he has the greed for.
Mm. Yeah, because Herman is, it's not like he's already lost his money and needs to get it back, or he needs it to, you know, pay for his sick relative's surgery or something like that.
And it's not as if he has planned in the beginning to go out and kill this woman, the Countess, but he's willing to do anything to achieve his ends. So he thinks everything is fine. So greed is really kind of going over the power of morality in this story.
Mm. So what does he do? The next sentence says he manipulates Lizaveta, and even after his actions result in the death of the Countess, he still tries to get rich. So to manipulate somebody is to trick them, to deceive them, to use your words or other things to make them do what you want them to do, which is likely not what they want to do. You're kind of, it's not forcing them. You're not exactly putting a gun to their back and saying, you do this, open up the cash register and give me the money. But he's using kind of emotional blackmail and tactics like that. He's pretending to love her, to trick her into letting him into the house, all this kind of thing.
And you can also manipulate something, right? Besides a person, you can like manipulate something, and it means just to use your hands to handle something. For example, if you want to get a Rubik's cube one side all the same color, then you might manipulate the cube, which means to move it with your hands to get it into all the same color on at least one side. Maybe you can do the whole Rubik's cube.
The article continues, of course, he loses everything and, in Pushkin's conclusion, actually goes insane. Mm. And this can be seen as him getting what he richly deserves. So, yeah, this is the perils of greed. This is Herman. He goes through with it all, but loses his money. So that's one bad thing. And then goes insane. He goes mad. He loses his kind of sense of what's real and what isn't.
At least that's the idea that we're getting as the reader, right? Must be that he's crazy. The Queen of Spades character didn't actually wink at him in the story. He's crazy. He's insane.
Yeah, Pushkin, again, we couldn't include it in the story, but in the conclusion, that's what we mean by in Pushkin's conclusion, Herman is actually sent to an asylum, a place for insane people. And he just sits there going, three, seven, ace, over and over again.
Sounds like a Batman movie.
Kind of,
your Batman guy is sitting in the asylum at the end going, I just want the bat. I just want the bat.
Right.
But so that is something that he richly deserves. If you deserve something, it's something that you ought to get. It's something that you really should get. And because, well, you deserve it. Maybe you deserve an honor because you've created an amazing film. And you compete in a competition and you receive this honor because it's what you deserve because your film was so wonderful. Here it's a negative usage in terms of what he deserves is to be crazy and to be in an insane asylum. It's his just desserts. That's another fun way to say that.
Okay, we're going to take a short break in our article now and listen to our Chinese teacher. And we'll be back with the second part of the article in just a few minutes.
听众朋友大家好，我是安娜。我们昨天带大家看黑桃皇后 The Queen of Spades 这个故事，不知道到底是鬼故事还是不是鬼故事哦。好，我们今天来看一下这个故事到底有什么主题呢？昨天有带大家特别针对第一段的最后一句有一个 greed 贪婪这个字有特别抓出来，对不对？没有错。当然这个文学的主要啊都还是会有一些主题去探讨啦，也就是因为这些经典的主题在现在当中都还是人性，所以大家还是会去不断的流传，不断的阅读。那这个故事其实就出版于1834年，那它的作者呢，是一个俄罗斯的传奇作家，就是普希金 Pushkin。那我们刚刚提到的都在第一段第一句跟第二句的地方，不晓得大家有没有注意到第一段的第二句，它其实是个分词构句呢？因为句子如果一开始是用 ing 或者是 pp 开头又打逗点的话，通常都会跟逗点之后的主词会有文意上绝对的关系。比如说在第一段的第二句 published in 1834， 到底是什么东西被出版啊？逗点之后当然是 it， 当然是这个文学作品。所以如果句子要还原的话，我们可以说 The Queen of Spades was published in 1834逗点 and it has inspired。 那如果都是在讲同样的事情，逗点之后的 and 干脆省略，所以前面的主词动词都会删掉， 这就是所谓的分词构句，会让句子呢可以完全的比较的简化，然后也比较流畅。那当然我们看到1834年到现在几乎已经是200年的作品，它这么样的经典，其实这部作品除了经典之外，也主要是因为它有启发其他的作品，包括像一些同名歌剧啊，还有其他的电影。那故事是不是真的是真实存在呢？其实灵感是来自于一个真实存在的俄国女士，而且是贵族哦。而且据大家说，她真的是在巴黎学到了法罗游戏的秘密。这里是在第一段第三句的地方。那这里的第一段第三句，我们先看到逗点前面有 A real Russian noble woman， 逗点之后其实有非限定用法的关系子句，不过 who is 整个删掉，被简化了。那这里的 who is to said have learned the Pharaoh's secret in Paris， 其实也有一个特别的句型，就是被动表示客观的讲法，也就是说他被大家说他有在巴黎学到法罗游戏的秘密，就是被动表示客观。好，那么当然我们接下来还是要看到故事的整个主题呀、啊，主题就是所谓的贪婪嘛 greed， 所以在作品当中其实就对贪婪这件事情对大家做了一些警告。然后呢还有另外一个主题，就是到底什么是真的什么不是真的。那比如说到底真的有鬼吗？然后最后那个女伯爵是真的在那个黑桃 A 上面跟她眨了眼吗？接下来我们就来看一下第二段。好，在这个主题有关于 greed 贪婪的这个 greed 是可以看到在 Herman 的 transformation， 也就是他的转变啦。一个人当然贪的时候就是会变得很奇怪，所以 Herman 也是啊，原本他只是静静的看着他的这个 peers 同侪赌博啊，然后后来发现哦，原来可以真的一夜致富，真的很有钱耶，因为贪婪的关系就变了。所以在第二段第一句啊蛮重要的，除了文意还有他句子也很长，有带了两个限定用法的关系子句。这部分我们来看一下，既然 Herman 他有转变，这个 transformation 是从怎么样转成怎么样呢？第二段的第一句我们从 from one 然后拉过去哦，一直到 to one， 先把 from 跟 to 这边抓出来。那后面的 one 呢是什么呢？ one 就是一个什么样的人，不过都带的限定用法关系子句，所以我们从 from one who 一直到 gambling 这边又挂号， to one到了另外一种人 willing， 一直到句尾也左右挂号。好，所以 Herman 怎么样转变呢？他从一个本来是观察赌博的人 from one who observes gambling to one 到了另外一种 willing， 前面是关系子句的简化，省略的是 who is be willing to do something， 愿意做某事嘛，居然却愿意去伤害别人达到他的目标。所以这一句呢感觉上有点长，其实是因为有两个简化两个这个限定用法的关系子句。而且在主题的这个 greed 当中啊，一个人的转变是很重要的，他甚至到了第二句还操弄了丽莎维塔，让他的行动呢导致伯爵夫人的死亡。所以这个贪啊会让一个人转变，而且会有很严重的后果。而且因为贪心的关系，他还试图还要致富啊，然后到最后虽然第一页第二页都赢了很多钱，到最后还是失去了一切。事实上他的结局是发疯哦，我们在第二段的第三句这边可以特别注意一下，发疯我们在这个第三句逗点前面的 go insane 这里可以画起来。 insane 其实就是 crazy 的意思，就是不理智的意思。好，那当然这就可以看作因为太过于贪婪了，所以就得到应有的惩罚。
Right now, so we're going to take a quick break. So stay tuned and we'll be back again in just a moment.Welcome back, guys. We're still talking about the Queen of Spades. And right now we're moving into the section of the story where we're getting into the supernatural. Ooh, it's Halloween in our story.
Mm.
So we start out with, but how did this happen? How did it happen that Herman ends up insane and sitting there and receiving his just desserts and being crazy?
Yeah, how did he end up putting all his money on the Queen of Spades? Like, what went wrong? And we see in the article, Pushkin blurs the boundaries between reality and the supernatural in his story. Now, if you blur something, you make it not kind of straight and obvious. You make it hard to see. Think of you're writing on a piece of paper and then you wipe your hand over the ink before it's dried and your writing would be blurred.
Right.
You blur your own writing. In this case, we're blurring the boundaries between two things. The boundary is kind of like the dividing line, mm-hmm. like this is on one side and this is on the other.
Country boundaries.
Yeah, like a border between two countries. But if you blur that boundary, then you're basically not sure where one starts and the other ends. You can't see the clear dividing line between the two. So to blur the line between two things is to kind of put them together so you're not really sure which is which and what's going on.
And I have to say, when I read this introduction to the story and we've been talking about it, it connects to me to Edgar Allan Poe.
Mm-hmm.
He's somebody who lived around the same time as Pushkin. They were both kind of romantic writers, which we'll talk about some in our story tomorrow. But there's a gothic element to this. And when you talk about something being gothic, it's very dark and very mysterious and involves a little bit of the supernatural, especially in gothic writing. And Edgar Allan Poe was definitely a gothic writer. But I kind of wonder if in some ways Pushkin didn't, you know, go into that area a mm-hmm. bit as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And because he brings in this case, the boundaries are between reality, so a man getting into trouble about gambling and hurting people and stuff, and the supernatural. Often we see the supernatural. It's often with this definite article, the
right.
supernatural. So things that are more than natural, things that are outside nature. So if you talk about ghosts, if you talk about monsters, if you talk about spirits, that is the supernatural. There are a lot of beliefs in Taiwan around Ghost Month in the summer that that's when the boundaries between our world and the supernatural world of the ghosts is blurred.
Yeah, and they get very thin.
Yeah.
They often talk about the boundaries being very thin.
Yeah, the gates open and the right. ghosts come out and you leave out some food and you don't go swimming. So the supernatural is that sort of world of ghosts and spirits and things like that.
So in talking about this blur, we see here, did the dead countess's eyes really open at her funeral? Or was this a sign of Herman's guilt? So the question really comes down to, well, is this real? Or was it just something that was going on in his head? Was he already insane at this point of the story? Because when he drew that pistol and went too far and caused the woman to die of fright, did he feel some deep sense of guilt, or is his greed still winning? And this is kind of the question that we're talking about in this sentence.
And the same questions, is it real? Did it really happen? Or is it just he's creating it out of his own guilt? The same questions apply to the apparition of the Countess's ghost and the final moment where the Queen of Spades card winks at Herman. So the word apparition can just mean it's the noun form of appear.
Right.
It's similar to the word appearance. The reason I chose to use the word apparition because apparition is also a synonym for ghost.
Right.
So it's kind of got a double meaning in this sentence.
And it often is paired with ghostly apparition or terrifying apparition. But then you can also talk about something like a strange apparition in the sky. And that just means something strange forming or showing up in the sky. But a lot of times those ghostly apparitions kind of make it a fun thing to put together there.
So yeah, did this happen? Did the card wink at him or not? What is going on?
Is the ghost real or what's going on here? So the card, did it wink at him? Did the Countess somehow switch his bet from the ace to the queen from beyond the grave? Or did Herman deliberately cause his own downfall as a way to punish himself for his crimes? I love the complexity of this that must have been put down on paper when Pushkin was writing, right? Because when we talk about it here, it all seems very simple. It's bringing up all these questions about that blurring of reality. But to put it into writing so that the readers, when they read the story, go, what's going on? That's quite fun and mystical. He must have had a good time writing this story. So again, we're going to look at that sentence. So did the Countess somehow switch his bet from the ace to the queen? Was it the Countess? This is one side of the blur,
mm-hmm.
right? Did the Countess do this from beyond the grave? That concept is something supernatural. If somebody does something from beyond the grave, they're often communicating after they've died. Your grave is where you're buried when you die. So if you communicate from beyond the grave, maybe someone is having a seance where everyone's sitting around a table and you come and you make the table shake, or you knock on the table, or you talk through one of the people sitting around the table. And that's you talking from beyond the grave. That's the expression that comes out. Or did Herman deliberately cause this because of his own sense of guilt? So if you deliberately cause something, it means you do it with intention. You mean for it to happen, and it does happen. And he's maybe at this point so crazy with the guilt that he has in his brain from killing the Countess that he intentionally causes himself to fail. He's just kind of crazy.
He causes his own downfall. Your downfall is your kind of fall and ruin from a point or place of success into a point or place of failure. You might talk of a successful sports team's downfall. They were good for a while, and then some stuff went wrong, and now they're just not very good.
Or star's downfall.
Yeah, you know, the star gets involved in some, you know, maybe gets addicted to something. It's their downfall, or just they're you're injured in an accident, and it's an unfortunate downfall, that kind of thing. So did he kind of get to the final night on betting on the ace, but think to himself somewhere, I don't deserve this. I shouldn't win all this money. I'm going to kind of put it on the queen, even though I'm kind of telling myself it's on the ace. It's almost like his brain has been broken in two, and half of him's doing one thing and the other half thinks it's doing the other thing.
And I really love how this whole article of today ends up with the last sentence. It's all about us making this decision. All of these questions are open to the reader's interpretation. So we brought up all these questions at the end of today's section, and it's leaving us kind of going, what's going on? Is it left? Is it right? Is it up? Is it down? Is it black? Is it white? Well, guess who gets to decide that? All of these questions are open to the reader's interpretation. That means it's up to the reader to decide, to interpret, to determine what they think is really going on in the story.
Yeah, Pushkin doesn't give you the answers. There's not an explanation of it, of what's actually happened. It's not a mystery novel where you learn all the solution at the end.
Right.
It's a mysterious novel where you, or short story, where you go, huh, I'm going to decide what I think happened, and that's what I will think. So, of course, other people can interpret it or understand it in a different way. But that's the end of our part of the article. We're going to hand over to our Chinese teacher once more, and then we'll be back to wrap things up.
不过我们可能会想说，这故事到底是怎么样的发生的？然后这样子作者是如何来表现他的手法？其实啊 ，Pushkin 他在整个故事的描述手法当中，他是把现实的 reality 还有超自然啊，因为有鬼魅嘛，然后又有这个女伯爵好像对他眨眼之类，对于这种现实跟超自然其实是模糊的界限。所以作者我们在看这个故事的时候，会觉得说，哎，这真的是一个鬼故事吗？然后他真的是有鬼出现吗？告诉他秘密吗？还是没有呢？我们在第三段第一句这个地方，我们可以把 blur the boundary 这个地方划线起来。Boundary 就是所谓的界限的意思。前面 blur 这个动词啊，就是模糊的意思。有时候我们可能会哭的时候，我们的这个视线可能会模糊掉，这个时候也可以用 blur 这个动词。那当然后面的 reality 还有 the supernatural也都是在这个故事当中的重点。比如说在第三段特别有提到，在葬礼上的时候，死去的伯爵夫人是不是真的睁开眼睛，还是说这是他自己内疚的一个迹象，感觉 the countess 的这个眼睛真的是睁开呢？然后还有同样的问题，就是我们刚刚说的伯爵夫人这个鬼魂真的有出现吗？然后呢，最后是不是真的有跟他眨眼睛呢？在第三段的第四句，这个地方因为还蛮长的，我们特别要来看一下。首先先看一下它的动词 apply to 是介系词哦，它指的是适用于什么什么。比如说这个问题是不是适用于这个场景，或者是校规也适用于哪里吗？什么规则适用于哪里？接下来看到的这个 apparition 指的是一个幻影的意思，那个 女伯爵她的鬼魂的这种幻影，然后跟最后的 the final moment 最后什么时候呢？也就是黑桃皇后到底是不是真的有跟 Herman 眨眼睛？好，我们在这边看到一个 where 可以把它左括号起来到右括号。那这时候你就想说，哇，那这个先行词是什么？先行词是 the final moment， 是时间内，怎么会用 where？ 其实这边先行词很长，先行词啊，其实从 apply to 后面的 the apparition 一直到 final moment 这边都是先行词，所以在这里啊，就直接用一个 where， 就总而言之说，这些故事当中出现的这整个场景，都会用适用于这一些问题吗？到底是现实真的，还是所谓的 supernatural 是超自然的呢？超自然的东西有时候我们也不见得就不是真实啊，所以为什么这个文学作品会很经典？然后它还有一个主题就是所谓的贪婪，大家都会很贪心啊，然后大家都知道要寡欲啊，减少欲望才会快乐，所以这个作品啊其实蛮值得一读，而且重点是这个作品其实没有很长，所以如果大家有时间的话，其实网络上就可以找得到哦。不过明天我们还会带大家来看一下俄国文学之父普希金。我们明天见，我是安娜，拜拜。
That's all we have for you today, folks. We hope you've enjoyed looking at day two of The Queen of Spades, and you'll join us again tomorrow as we look at it a little bit more deeply into the life of Pushkin himself. And thank you for joining us at English Digest. I'm Leah.
And I'm Pat. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.